Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they picked their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. This is the first episode to feature two guests, Adi and Kirillos, who will detail how they used a meta-analysis to analyze how exon skipping could impact the future of DMD research. Today is a very special episode. I'm joined by not one student researcher, but actually two. And one of these people wasn't even in the class this year, but he was nice enough to take time to help his buddy out and to do this podcast. So first, let's meet one of our student researchers who was in this research class. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Adi Saluja. I'm a junior here in the Strategic Asset Management Program at Bergen Tech. And I center my research right here around the disease known as Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, hoping to find a cure.
And go ahead.
I'm Kirillos Gad. I'm the one who helped Adi on his research. I'm a junior in the colonology program here at Bergen Tech.
And Adi, one thing the people should know about you that's not related to your grade and your major.
Yeah, one thing I guess people should know is I like to work out.
I also like to work out, and I've yet to go to the gym with Adi.
But after this podcast, they're going to the gym together as buds. All right. So, Adi, you mentioned that your work involved Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Quite ambitious for a high school student to try out. So do you want to give people an overview of how you tried to address this big problem with the limited resources you had here?
Yeah, so I mean, I kind of like Googled like a bunch of different rare diseases and found Duchenne's muscular dystrophy to be the one that interested me the most. And once I had that disease in my mind, I kind of wanted to see what I could do with it. I initially started out with things like trying to use AI to be able to create a cure for this, but soon I realized that at the high school level, it simply wasn't possible, as I would need public medical records amongst a lot of other things that I just didn't have access to. This allowed me to go through a bunch of trial and error with different topics, including side effects, treatments, eventually coming across exon skipping, a popular treatment used for this disease. And I found that though I can't conduct actual clinical trials using exon skipping, there are a lot of current trials that exist with a variety of effectiveness. So I wanted to see whether we could come up with an overall idea of how effective exon skipping could be for this disease through a meta-analysis.
Do you want to explain what exon skipping is to the people who may not be familiar? I mean, not to brag, but I have a biology degree, so I'm quite familiar with exon skipping. But for the people who don't know.
Yeah, sure. So basically, exon skipping is where in your like pre-mRNA transcripts, there's a chain of exons that make up like the proteins that you have. So where exon skipping works is the mutated exon, for example, a common one is like where exon 51 often gets mutated, causing the disease to develop and the loss of dystrophin, where exon skipping skips that mutated exon and creates like a truncated form of the protein, but still functional to stop the disease's progression.
So this is a new form of gene therapy, and the point of your meta-analysis was to reveal what?
To come up with like the overall molecular impacts of how effective exon skipping could be in hopes of solving DMD.
Okay, and how is Kirillos involved? You want to explain your involvement in this situation?
So me and Audie will later on co-publish our paper, but most of my thing was making sure to limit bias within the paper. I reviewed all the same sources Audie did. I tried to look after things that Audie may have missed initially, because we went through hundreds of sources to limit it down to our, what was it, final 11?
11, yeah.
To limit it to our final 11 sources. So going through thousands of sources, it's obviously very difficult for one person to do that. So me and Audie looked at each source together, making sure to limit biases, and obviously, yeah, that's kind of where it ended off.
Just as a follow-up question, that's very generous of you to give your time to help Adi with his project. Why, other than Adi being a fantastic person who wouldn't want to spend extra time with him, what compelled you to be a part of this process?
So I joined in around mid-November, and Audie hadn't really narrowed down his topic yet. But I think it was more of Audie was telling me about his research project, and I just thought it was really cool. But there's kind of a backstory to this. One time, me and Audie were on a little life journey, and basically we wanted to do our own research on like the effects of social media on mental health. But Audie's like, I'm kind of conducting a research thing right now. Maybe you should join in on it. Like you love biology. You know, you want to go into STEM. I think this would be cool. I'm like, okay, cool. Let me look it over. And I'm like, yo, this is actually this is really cool stuff. So I just really loved the entire process, and I loved learning about something completely different.
So wait, let me get this straight. At a highly competitive high school, you're telling me that a student on this podcast right now, he learned just for the sake of learning? There was no grade involved?
In other words, he wanted to get published.
Oh, that was the external motivation?
Well, obviously that's one of the motivations, but honestly, I'm very into biochemistry. I love learning about it. I think it's something really cool. But so just having a research project, like an opportunity right there for me to like love me to do that, and just also do it with one of my friends, I thought that was just an opportunity I really couldn't pass up. And getting published is also pretty cool.
But let's just say you never get published. Was the experience working together worth it?
Absolutely. Maybe not specifically because of Audie, but like I think I just learned so much from this entire process. Like I would absolutely do it again if given the chance. Maybe not even with Audie, but maybe even if me and Audie are like bored in the summer, like, yeah, let's do another meta-analysis, I would absolutely do it again. It was just such an experience that I learned so much from, and I don't think I could have gained that knowledge from anything else.
Well, that's beautiful, honestly. Adi, I can't tell if you're laughing or what's the laughter over there?
I'm just saying, because during the entire research process, there were a lot of challenges that we had to go through, and a lot of moments where we were both frustrated at the research and at each other. But yeah, that's what I'm saying, because it's kind of just funny how in the end it all came out pretty good and we think it is worth it. But during the actual research, it was tough times.
Yeah. So being able to see your, what was it, 22 pages, right?
Yeah.
So being able to see your 22 page, like, pages of work right in front of you that you and your best friend kind of just really, like, spent your entire time on and really grinded towards, just seeing that final product was just such an irreplaceable feeling that I remember us finishing the paper and we're like, oh my God, like, it's actually, like, wow. Like, it's in front of us right now.
Wow. So what would you say, because Adi, you brought this up, what would you say was, well, and we'll get to both of your perceptions on this, but what would you say was your biggest challenge going through? Is there a moment that stuck out when you were like, when you overcame it, you were like, yes, like this is, I'm so happy that I figured this out.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge was figuring out how to include sources, because we went through that like I think a total of like 7 or 8 times where we included some, then we had to restart the entire process because our inclusion criteria just wasn't like fit. So when we did Science Direct first, we ended up with like 25, 30 sources, then realized half of them weren't even available to us because you had to like buy a subscription for them. Then we kind of had to regrow like our inclusion criteria and change it to like the way we want to measure dystrophin, because that's the protein that allows like Duchenne's muscular dystrophy to be to develop. So I think the biggest challenge was like figuring out what we need the sources to have to be able to include them. And once we finally figured that out and got the final list of sources, it just was such a relief.
It's basically pushing the boulder up the hill, but once it's there, it all just flows like that kinetic energy. It's all just, exactly. You're building up that potential energy, and then the kinetic energy just flows, if I could use some physics in here. Kirillos, would you say that that for you, again, your involvement in this process is a little bit different, but would you say that was the biggest challenge for you, or was there something else?
I think my biggest challenge easily came during data extraction, because we kind of went in, this was both of our first time using SPSS or using any meta-analysis software. So we went in and we're like, we don't really know how to like function this. So one of our biggest challenges was actually learning how to conduct a meta-analysis and what specific data to extract to make sure all of our results are fine. Like none of our results were skewed, like all of our results were reliable. And like, I feel like just getting that initial data was easily the hardest part of the process.
So after this was, how did you celebrate? Like this is one of the rare projects here where another student at the school was nice enough to actually volunteer to help a student out for inter-rater reliability. So like, what did you guys do? Like you get over these big humps, like in these hurdles, what do? You go get ice cream together? Like what did you do to celebrate the fact that like, yeah, we got this?
I mean, most of the time we were just on like the FaceTime, and every time we got through like that challenge, we just like, it was like a huge sigh of relief. And then after that, we took like a huge break and stopped working on it for like a few days and just had fun. And then came back to it once we were done with that.
Okay. All right.
After the entire project was done, I think I just laid back and maybe a tear fell down my eye because of how happy I was that I don't have to put in, you know, before publication, there's obviously things you need to fix, things you need to add, but just that the bulk of it is done. It was just, I don't remember what I did. I just remember a feeling of happiness I may have not experienced since I was like 5 years old getting ice cream.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah, so we got more into, you know, the personal and the friendship development in the process. But let's rewind. So what did you find out in the end? And what are the potential implications for sufferers of DMD based on what you discovered?
Yeah, so I'll start here. I think, like, the main finding we had was that we calculated, like, a overall effect size of exon skipping in terms of finding or restoring dystrophin, and that value was around 1.9, and anything over a 0.8 value is considered like a large effect. So that kind of showed that exon skipping has a large effect on restoring the dystrophin, and restoring dystrophin is like the main ingredient needed to be able to slow the disease's progression. So I think the main implication that has is just giving like hope to like the clinicians and like scientists and even DMD, like the whole DMD community, that exon skipping in the future, as we evolve in the right direction, could be the main thing that serves as a cure.
And are both of you looking to go into biology in the future, or was this just a passion project because you were interested in conducting a meta-analysis at the high school level for the first time?
Yeah, I'm planning on majoring in biochemistry in college, so okay. This was an amazing opportunity.
All right, and Adi?
Yeah, I'm focusing more on, like, the business aspect of college, but, like, I still think, because as I said, like, I'm in the business program here at BT, but again, like, I kind of just wanted something to do, like, with a little bit science-based, because I also do have a little bit of interest in that.
So the two of you have run a meta-analysis, and I'm going to ask you two questions here, and either of you can respond. Can you describe what a meta-analysis is and what the value of it is in terms of research? So, I mean, I kind of know the gist of why people do meta-analyses, but if they come across this word and it's in a study, like, you know, it's titled like a meta-analysis of exon skipping regarding DMD, what does that method entail and why is that method important?
Okay, so, I mean, meta-analysis is more or less just where you compile, like, a bunch of sources that measure similar variables, like, around the same topic, and then run, like, a bunch of statistical tests on them to come up with an overall idea of, like, what in this case, like, the efficiency, or, like, in other cases, like, the overall idea between the two variables and the relationship between the two variables. So, like, here, I think there were like a bunch of sources, but as I said, the sources had like a varied range of efficiency. Some were saying that exon skipping, in some cases, it even reduced dystrophin production. So as I said, I mean, since there was such a wide variety of effectiveness, we realized that we needed like one source that can combine all of these to figure out like what the overall trends are. And we just ran a bunch of statistical tests on similar outcome measures from each study to come up with these overall effectiveness.
Okay, so for example, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but let's say, you know, right now Hot Topic is cell phone use and well-being, let's say, right? And you have, and you want to focus specifically on adolescents or early teens or whatever that happens to be. And let's say you go through the literature, the peer-reviewed literature that's out there, and you find 100 articles that are examining the same types of variables. That's where this method comes in handy.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
Okay. So what advice would you give to other students who want to actually do one of these? Because the barrier to entry in terms of finances is pretty low. All you need is a computer and access to some databases, which a school may or may not have, as the two of you obviously learned. But once you have that, you could feasibly run this, you could, as Kirillos brought up, like you could run this over the summer with a completely different topic now that you know the mechanics of it. So what advice would you give other people who are pursuing this?
I think you have to walk in and realize that this is actually a very long and difficult process. This was a compilation of even something as simple as narrowing down what topic you want to conduct the meta-analysis on. That took us, 2 or 3 months?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, each step of the process is its like own little journey, and you just have to be prepared to go in, and you know you're gonna have complications. Every meta-analysis in history that's ever been conducted has had complications. You just have to be ready for that actual difficulty of it.
Yeah, I think the best advice I can give someone to doing a meta-analysis is just to be patient and like keep trying, because yeah, like Kirillo said, you're gonna have a bunch of challenges, but if you just like work your way through them, eventually you're gonna come out with like a wonderful result and a wonderful paper.
All right, great. And now meta-analyses in and of themselves are quite complex, but you're also using it to understand a gene therapy method that is also complex. So how has this experience, you think, enhanced your ability to communicate complex ideas effectively?
Ideas at the molecular level that are very hard to conceptually grasp, I think this completely changed the way that I can communicate that. Just being able to take an idea that you can't see with the visible eye and make it comprehensible to anybody. Because the whole point of a paper is like, all right, if only scientists can understand it. Scientists are like, all right, scientists are very smart people. They got it. Just to make it understandable to a person who maybe has DMD, maybe to a person who just... Because we essentially, when you write a paper about a hope for a new type of therapy or a new type of treatment, it's to provide hope. So I think learning how to portray complex ideas in an understandable fashion was easily the most important thing we learned how to do during this.
Yeah, I agree with that, because a lot of our papers were like that. The clinical trials were extremely complex, and when I originally wrote like half my research paper, it was really complex. But then I realized that like our audience is a reasonably intelligent non-expert in the field, which means that like we need to simplify it down for a person who doesn't have too much background on DMD or exon skipping to be able to understand that. And I think being able to do that and learning that skill was extremely valuable in me like being able to convey complex topics to pretty much anybody.
Is there anyone that you tried to communicate this to, either friends or family, where they just looked at the two of you and were like, look, I have no idea what the two of you are talking about? And as you improved with your explanations, like they got it still? Or I'm just thinking outside the school, because obviously you live lives outside of here where people are like, hey, what are you doing? What have you been spending your hours doing on FaceTime with Adi?
Yeah, I would say the main people were probably people in the research class themselves who barely understood what I was talking about when I tried to explain my topic. But eventually, as the year went on, they understood it. And then, like, sometimes outside of school friends, like in my town, if I tried to talk to them about research, they'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? And then at near the end of the year, once I fully explained it, they finally started to get it in a little bit, at least. I don't know about you, Kirillos, but yeah.
At the very beginning of this project, me and Audie were talking about exon skipping, and we were talking about how some of the gene therapies that we were like discussing, or is just taking Duchenne's and kind of taking it into its less, into its more mild version of Becker's. And I remember having that conversation next to the culinary lockers in front of everybody, and everybody's just looking at me and they're like, what the hell are you saying? They're just looking at me and they're confused. So obviously, and explaining to your mom that you're on the phone with Audie for 16 hours straight isn't a very easy thing to explain to your mom. But
he's very easy to talk to.
Yeah. I'm like, mom, it's, I can't explain it even if I wanted to. But yeah, that's, that. I think that's the most I've ever had to explain it to somebody.
But once you did finally feel understood, did you feel that recognition? You're like, yes, like we got it. Like people get what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
Oh, great. All right. So this is the last question. And I want to, again, just thank the two of you for your time. Cause obviously you've given a lot to it, to this project, to each other. So in what ways would you say this collaborative aspect of your research, differed from your typical class? And I say this knowing full well that Kyrillos is not even in this class, but the collaborative aspects of the research process, was it different here than your typical class, in a better way, in a negative way? But what are your thoughts on that? And we'll close.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like in a regular class, most of the time the teacher ends up like teaching you a topic, you take a test on it, and that's how you learn. But in this class, it's more of like an independent process. For me, it became a little bit more not independent because I had a partner working with me on this. But as we like we almost learned like productively struggling through the new information that we found and saw, you know, where we read sources that we didn't understand, we had to figure out ways to summarize them. I think ChatGPT helped out a lot in understanding like what each of these sources really meant. And then eventually being able to read the sources on our own and fully understanding what they mean. But aside from that, the collaborative aspect was like a lot more partnerish than most other classes, like where we work in groups and other classes. I don't think we really get as deep into each topic together as we did here. And, you know, find out a lot of challenges between us and between the topic.
Yeah, but that's life. You're going to have challenges between people. How do you resolve them? Because relationships are the most important thing. So Kyrillos, again, you weren't even really in this class, but collaboration, I guess, with Adi on those 16-hour FaceTime calls where your mom was questioning your reality.
I'm not even in this class, but it's obviously very different than any other class. So since I'm not in this class, I'll talk more of the process. Right now we're doing cancer research projects in bio. So right now it's just completely different. It's like you're given a rubric and you're like, all right, do your research, do it, make a 5-minute video. That's it. I think this is a process that will that has pushed me more than any other class I have ever taken. I feel like AP research as a class, that's it. Like for the people who do actually take it, I really do have the most respect for them I can right now, because it is a very difficult process. So
you hear that, audience? You hear what Kyrillos just said? He just said he has the utmost respect for you. Sorry, there's a room of other AP researchers in here right now, and one of them is clapping ever so silently because I've just been on top of them about being quiet. All right. Thank you both for a great interview, and thank you for a wonderful year, and thank you for listening.